Is that okay? Can y'all hear me? Wow. Hello. Shabbat Shalom. You know that today's a Shabbat. It's Yom Tov, Chag Sameach. My Bible's really aren't this bad. Everybody came in and to help us when the flood came in, and I've got over 4,000 books in my library. And even my Bibles went into a crate somewhere that we have no idea where it is. Can't find anything. I have a brand new $400 lavalier microphone. We don't know where it is. And anyway, let me get some books out. My life's work has been studying the temple. Tim, when was the very first Hanukkah meeting? 97. So about 20 years ago. Yeah, I did temple seminars before that. But the first one was up in Oklahoma. Where was that at? Did we? Okay. No, talking about like about way up in northeastern Oklahoma. That was 99. No, not that. Trying to think. It was at a hotel at Hanukkah. Yeah. 97, okay. I remember that Dr. Merritt was a speaker, and he actually, I was talking about the temple, and he gave me, I spoke in my slot, and then he gave his slot to me because everybody wanted to hear about the temple. And that's the time that Dean and I became friends, close friends. We sat and talked for a long time in the restaurant there, and it's been a lot of years. The several books came out, and one is called "The Temples That Jerusalem Forgot." How many have seen this book by Dr. Ernest Morton? Just a few. Now, a more recent book. This came out in the year 2004. Or 2000. This came out in 2010. It's by Robert or Bob Cornuke. It's called "Could History Be So Stunningly Wrong? Temple: Amazing New Discoveries That Changed Everything About the Location of Solomon's Temple." How many have seen this? Few. How many have seen the videos that are out, especially on YouTube, that the temple is not on the Temple Mount, but rather down at the City of David? Several have seen it. Several have seen it. They put out a new video in June. This is Bob Cornuke and several others with him put out a new video, and it went out on YouTube. It lasts for probably about 45 minutes. And I was shocked when I saw that. I looked at the video in July. I got a message from someone by text and said, "You need to look at this." And I looked at it, and they already had over 800,000 views. Now, it came out in June, and in July, they had 800,000 views. That is an epidemic. And there are now over 1 million views. Now, I have a question. Which is worse, a half-true or a blatant lie? A half-truth, much more dangerous. Because for most people, you can't tell the difference between a half-truth and a truth. And so you can easily be following half-truths and be in total error. A blatant lie, you have to choose to follow that one. A blatant lie, you could tell it at a spot, and you make a choice whether you want to go with that or not go with it. So, how many of you have been to Israel? A few of you. We need to get all of you there. It'll change your life. Absolutely change your life. And you need to try to go and go and go as often as you can. We believe these are the last days. Therefore, if these are the last days, then the Word of God, while it's always going to be relevant and always important, will step up a level. And so to see in the land of Israel, to see Jerusalem, to walk on the Temple Mount, it makes the Scriptures come alive like you cannot imagine. You come back and read a different Torah than what you read before, a different New Testament than what you read before. But let me show you, I'm going to jump forward since several of you have not been to Israel. What we're looking at in this slide is the eastern part of the Old City. The eastern part of the Old City. And what we're saying is the eastern part at the time that Jerusalem was destroyed by the Romans in 70 Common Era. And so to get some geography, what we call the big square that you see at the top, the big rectangle, that is what we call the Temple Mount. In Hebrew, the term is Har Habayit. Har Habayit. Now, which means mountain of the house. Below that, you'll see, I can't tell the number, not sure. You see the black where it says Temple Mount? You can just identify the Temple Mount right below it. It says Ophel, Ophel, O-P-H-E-L. All right? So below that, we start the city of David. And so the city of David is going to be from your third black bar all the way to the bottom. Now, when David conquered the city, there was already a city there. It was the Jebusites. And so what he's going to conquer will be from the bottom black bar, okay, so from the bottom of the city, coming up to approximately, you see a red dot between two bars. Do you see that? It won't work for me to be able to click this, and you won't be able to see it. But that red dot in between the two bars, the bar right above it, that's how high the Jebusite city came. Now, how do we know that? Well, they've uncovered it. They have gone in and they have extensively uncovered it. So this is the area that we're going to be talking about. In these books, they're going to claim that the temple is going to be located approximately from where you see that red dot up to where you see the Ophel. All right, everybody understand? As opposed to it being this large area, this big rectangle, which is 35 acres. Now, let's go back up here. This is a quote out of Ernest Morton's book, this book. And this is going to be on his page 3. It says, but look at the simple facts. Since everyone now knows that the Mount Sion of King David's time was located in the southern part of Jerusalem on its southeastern ridge. This means that the temples would have to be located immediately north of what was called the Ophel in the scriptures, but not a third of a mile north to the Dome of the Rock. And that's about right. It's about a third of a mile from the Ophel to the Dome of the Rock, which is on the Temple Mount. This well-known geographical fact signifies that the real site of the temples was a few yards or meters west of the Gihon Spring, about a third of a mile south of the Dome of the Rock, now situated within the enclosure of the Haram Esh Sharif. The Haram Esh Sharif is what the Muslims call the Temple Mount. It means the noble sanctuary. Now, before we go any further, let me ask you a question. What is the size of a cubit? All right, 18 inches. That is generally the answer that we'll get, or from the elbow to the fingertip, okay? My question on that is whose arm, okay? Because it's going to vary on the size of the person's arm. In reality, there are a number of cubits that are found in the ancient world, okay? So not all cubits are going to be standard. And so we know that the cubits that were used on the Temple Mount, there are three of them, that the smallest is 19.2 inches. The middle one is 20.67 inches, and the largest is 23.04 inches. Okay, now, you don't need to remember that. What you need to remember is the smallest that a cubit can be is 14 inches, and the largest it can be is 2 feet. Anywhere in between that range, you can find cubits, okay? Now, there is a problem that we're going to have with the temple being located here. I want to work on several things. Here, since everyone now knows that the Mount Zion of King David's time, or Mount Zion, was located in the southern part of Jerusalem on its southeastern ridge. Is that a true statement? Yes. In the time of King David, that was true. That was all of Jerusalem at that time. But in the time of Solomon, the city's going to expand. There's a place up on Mount Zion, which is in the Jewish quarter, called the Broad Wall. And the Broad Wall was built by King Hezekiah in the 8th century BCE. It was to stop the Assyrian king Sanherib, who was coming down with a massive army. In Isaiah chapter 22, it says that he broke up houses and fortified the walls. And lo and behold, at the base of the Broad Wall, they have uncovered it. You can go and see it. At the base of the Broad Wall, sticking out of the wall, are houses from the 10th century BCE. Who was the king at that time? Solomon. They had already expanded to the western hill because they had a population explosion. Why do you think they had a population explosion at the time of Solomon? He's building the temple. He's got thousands of workmen coming in. That means you've got to have a bunch of inns. You've got to have restaurants. You've got to have places that supply everything that's needed. And so the city is expanding. By the time 200 years go by, 8th century, they're all over the western hill. And they call all of Jerusalem Mount Zion. Now, here, this becomes a half-truth because from this point in the book, he'll say only the city of David, this little part which David conquered, only that was Zion, the rest was Jerusalem. But it's not true. They're synonymous terms, one for the other, and Dr. Barrett made reference to that in his talk. Okay, so the second thing is that he's saying that the Gihon Spring, which, let me go forward, two slides. The Gihon Spring is going to be right there is the Gihon Spring. Now, where the little red dot is. And so he's going to say it's going to go from that point up to the Ophel. Now, the reason he's going to say that is because we have that the Gihon Spring was the water for Jerusalem. And that's true. However, the temple did not take its water from the Gihon Spring. The water was brought in from another source called the Etam Spring. And there were massive cisterns on the Temple Mount. One of the biggest, or the biggest, had the equivalent of 200 Olympic-sized swimming pools amount of water inside that one cistern. Why would they do that? Any idea? Right. In the case of a siege, and if the city were to fall, they need to have their own independent water supply. Okay? All right. So we're going to go back. I want to show you real quick. Let me jump forward. This is from Martin's book. This is how he says that the Temple Mount is not the Temple Mount, but was rather the Fortress Antonia, and the temple is going to be this little building down at the bottom. Okay, do you see that? I want to show you a major flaw in this. Let me back up, too. Why is this so important? You remember this morning when we were doing the lulav? And Tim was talking. And he said that we face east. If you're in South Africa, you face north. If you're in Russia, you face south. Why? What are you facing? The temple, but I want to know, what in the temple are you facing? The Holy of Holies. Why? Because it's the throne of God on earth. You're facing the throne. You don't turn your back on the throne. You face towards it. This makes it critically important to understand, to follow what God has put forth. There's a bigger problem here, is that when we say that the temple is not on the Temple Mount, it becomes anti-Semitic. It becomes basically another way to say the Jews are wrong. And that we don't want anything to do with whatever is Jewish. Tim also pointed out when we were doing the lulav, that it's time that the two come together. And so, it's a very, very, we have a million people following all these half-truths. Now, I want to show you as quickly as I can here. All right. The temple courts. Now, what I'm talking about is the entire temple courts. You have three major sets of courts. Okay? Three major ones. We have the inner courtyard. It's going to have some sub-courtyards in it. Don't worry about that. We have the inner courtyard. That's where the temple building and the altar is located. That's where the choir stands. That's where the activity of the ceremonies takes place. All right? Then we have the court of the women. Now, here at Sukkot, we're going to talk about the upper courtyard, and we're going to talk about the court of the women for the big temple ceremony of Sukkot. Then we have, that's your two inner courtyards. Then we have what's called the Rahab, which is the outer courtyard. Now, the outer courtyard is called, in Christianity, the court of the Gentiles, which you find in the book of Revelation. When you go to the Temple Mount, only a part of the Temple Mount is the actual Temple Mount. It was added to. Picture this podium right here. This is fairly square, okay? So we're going to say that this is the Temple Mount. The Hasmoneans, and I'm going to talk about who the Hasmoneans are in a moment, are going to add to the south. However, their extension wasn't called Har Habayit. Only Har Habayit was commanded by God. So it didn't have the Kedusha or the sanctification of this. Herod's going to add further to the south. He adds to the west, and he adds to the north. So not all of what we see up there was the actual Temple Mount. The Temple Mount was 500 cubits by 500 cubits. Now, they have discovered, this was done by two men. This is Professor Benjamin Bazaar and Lee Ripmeyer. Discovered what the size of the cubit that went around Har Habayit was. That's 20.67 cubits. That's that middle cubit that I was telling you about. The width of the city of David is 80 meters wide. Okay? The city of David is only, let me tell you the size of the Temple Mount. The entire Temple Mount is 35 acres. City of David is 14 acres. Big difference between the two. City of David is long and skinny. And so across, going from the east, going from the going across from the east to the west is only 80 meters. Now, 80 meters is going to be in feet, 262.42 feet, or 46 feet. So if we have a northern wall, we have to have 500 cubits here, okay? So let's say it's at the City of David, and that means it can only be 80 meters, right? Do you know what your size for a cubit comes out to be? It comes out to be 0.52492 inches. Approximately a half an inch for a cubit. Right there, you should go, that's impossible. Absolutely impossible. Okay, now, I want you to notice several things here. On the picture on the left, you see the temple and you see the palace. Do you see the palace? Right below the word temple. This is going to be the palace built by King Solomon, which was on the Temple Mount. David's palace was in the City of David. Now, Dr. Elot Mazar, who is the grandson of Benjamin Mazar, our granddaughter, Elot Mazar, in 1997, came out with an article in Biblical Archaeology Review on where the palace of King David should have been located, based upon, read the scripture. We had the city of the Jebusites, and then he built north of the city, right next to it. So they knew where the northern wall was. And so she basically came, and I love how this, she basically came and she wrote this article, and she drew an X, hypothetically, on the ground and said, David's palace is right here. Based on what she read. A number of institutions, organizations, said, boy, it looks pretty good. They raised the money, gave her the money to excavate. Lo and behold, we'll jump forward. Here's what she found. Now, I want you to see, I don't know if you can see it, I'm going to point to it here. There is a lady standing right there. Do you see her? Right against that wall. Let's go forward, another one. You see the person there in the when we say a massive palace, this was huge that she found. Look at this person, this individual there. These buildings are gigantic. Now, let me go back. You see this stepstone structure. This is coming out of the Kidron Valley, and the stepstone structure was built to enlarge the area of the City of David, going from the east to the west, because there wasn't enough room to put the palace. So they had to build a retaining wall in order to shore it up. Now, they did not know exactly what this stepstone structure, that was discovered back in the 1960s. And they did not know until about the year 2000 what that purpose of the stepstone structure was. But it was to hold up David's palace. All right, we're going to go back. All right, this is a quote from Martin. And he says, the fact is the temple is revealed in the historical records was not located near or within the Haram al-Sharif. Remember, that's what the Muslims call the Temple Mount. The actual Temple of Herod was located over the Gihon Spring on the southeast ridge of Jerusalem. It was so destroyed that modern archaeologists will not be able to discover any remnants of it within the confines of its former site. They will not find even its foundation stones that were once strongly positioned in place. This is because Jerusalem and the interior and exterior walls of the Temple of Herod were totally demolished down to the bedrock in the Roman-Jewish War of 66 to 70 Common Era. Only a few important Roman buildings continued to exist after that war. Among those Roman remains is the Haram al-Sharif that was once an imperial administration center that the Romans sustained and used for another 200 years after the war. Okay? So, he's going to have quotes out of Josephus that says that there was not a stone left on top of another stone. He's going to go to the book of Matthew. He's going to go to Luke. He's going to go to Mark. And he's going to bring up where Yeshua says that not one stone will be left upon another stone in not only the temple, but in the entire city of Jerusalem. All right, and I'm going to ask you something real serious. Do you believe that Yeshua is the Messiah? I do too, okay? I believe with all my heart he's the Messiah. Do you believe that he lies? Neither do I. Neither do I. Dr. Merritt told about the excavation that he's been working on Mount Zion. And he told about the three-story building. And I asked him, you know, how do you know that it was three stories? And he said that the walls had collapsed and they could see the floors. I asked him, how high were the standing walls? And correct me if I'm wrong, but you said about 8 feet, right? 4 to 8 feet, okay? So you had stone standing upon top of stone. Now the truth is that you'll find this all over the old city of Jerusalem. All over the place. I can take you to buildings that'll have all the way 15 feet high. Stone upon stone on top of stone on top of stone. So what I submit to you is that we have expressions that we use in English. I'll give you an example. Go fly a kite. When you tell somebody to go fly a kite, what are you saying? You're saying they're kind of crazy, what they're saying or something. You're not expecting them to go out and fly a kite. You weren't trying to say that to them. What I'm saying to you is not one stone will stand upon another stone is not an expression that's to be taken literally, but an expression that meant total destruction of the city. Total destruction of the temple. Yes, John? Well, feet high. And if you've been to Israel, if you looked, you have seen these types of places all over. You know, the whole Jewish quarter was destroyed by the Jordanians. And so when the Israelis, after the 67 war, they came in and said, we've got to rebuild. But the archaeologists said, wait a minute, this is a golden opportunity. We can see what's underneath before we rebuild. And lo and behold, they found tremendous quarters, houses. There is a mansion that's called the Palatial Mansion that we think is the mansion of Ananias, the high priest that, along with Caiaphas, we believe we have located Caiaphas's house. But every one of them have stone upon stone upon stone. Okay, so let me go back over here. One of the claims, let me show you this again. Let me try. Hey, look what I could do. All right. So we come out here. Martin is going to say, and so will Cornuke, that this is the Temple Mount. I mean, this is the Fortress Antonia. And that how he can prove this is, number one, that the walls here were not destroyed. Actually, the walls were destroyed. They were. The walls were destroyed. Let me see if I can do a little illustration. Angie, I'm going to use your lemons. Now, we have the stones of the temple, or big stones. They're called ashlars. And so they're going to be arranged like this in layers. Okay, so you have they're coming all the way down, and they're tremendously high. So let's say that the Romans come and they're going to knock the top layer off. Okay? So let me try here. They knock the top layer off and it comes here. You have debris. You knock the second layer off And it comes here. There comes a point your debris is so high you can't continue knocking off. Are you understanding what I'm saying? But it was destroyed all the way around. Now, also, they're going to claim that this was built as a Roman fortress. It was not. It was built by Herod. And the Romans took it over following Herod's death. Herod built forts all over the place. Now, they're going to say that that is a classic Roman fortress. Well, if we look at all of the fortresses that Herod built, first off, he generally wasn't the original builder. It was one of the Hasmonean kings, usually Alexander Unai, who is about 30 years, 40 years before the time of Herod. He came in, built fortresses like Masada, Machaerus, other fortresses. Herod comes along, he enlarges them, he modifies them, he puts his own touch on them. But they were built as Jewish fortresses, not as Roman fortresses. Now, what do I do with the little one of the things that they're going to claim is that they need this amount of space for the Roman soldiers. Yeah, the Roman soldiers, Greek in Josephus is that the garrison of the Antonia was a cohort. Now, the word cohort is going to be 400 to 600 soldiers. Generally, you have 10 cohorts to a legion. A legion's between 4,000 to 6,000 soldiers. At times, legions were brought in. At times when there was unrest, when there was trouble. And the Antonia could certainly house that many people. So we have a legion is approximately 6,000, the cohort 400 to 6,000. Martin is going to claim that the number is over 10,000 because he adds the auxiliaries. What are auxiliaries? They're not going to be Roman soldiers, but they're going to be allies. Auxiliaries were not allowed in Roman fortress compounds and Roman camps. You go to Masada. There are two legionary camps, Roman legions, one on the north side, one on the south side, or it's the east and the west, east and west. There is six auxiliary camps. They have to have their own camps. Why? The Romans didn't trust anybody. They didn't want anybody with an armed force in a position to be able to overthrow them. The suppliers of materials, according to Martin, they were inside the fortress. That's not true. It's a half-truth. They were not allowed inside the fortress. The suppliers of the materials had to be outside the fortress or in the countryside. They would not let them in the camp. All right? So, how many people do we need for the temple? How many people are going to be in the temple on a daily basis? Any ideas? Try around 4,000 or 5,000. If it's not a festival. This is a quote from Josephus. So these high priests, upon the coming of that feast, which is called the Passover, when they slay their sacrifices from the ninth hour to the 11th, but so that a company not less than 10 belong to every sacrifice, for it's not lawful for them to feast singly by themselves, and many of us are 20 in a company. To have a Passover Seder, you had to have a minimum of 10. You cannot have a more than 20, okay? And many of us are 20 in a company, found the number of sacrifices was 256,500. This is for one Passover, which upon the allowance of no more than 10 that feast together, in other words, the low number amounts to 2,700,000 and 200 persons that were pure and holy. That's how many people would be at the temple during Passover. So much for that argument. All right, now David. David is at his palace. He sinned against the people. I'm paraphrasing so I can get more in. You could go back and look this up, and do look it up. But David's at his palace. He sinned a number of the people. You know the story. He sinned a number of the people. So God sends the prophet Nathan to him and says, take a choice. I'm going to give you three choices, and they're all bad. He chooses that God would bring a plague upon the city for so many days. He wants to put himself in the hands of God. So the plague comes. The angel of the Lord is stretched out with a sword over Jerusalem. They have all these people dying, and David is repenting before God. So God instructs him to go up and to offer a sacrifice, to go up and offer a sacrifice from his palace. He goes up. When you read it, it says, he went up from there, and Ornan the Jebusite saw him coming. Okay, but wait a second. According to the Martin and the Cornuke theory, David's palace is right here. In other words, the temple is located, in their statements, right over David's palace. Which means that David is going to build an altar, and that altar they're going to burn offerings. Later on, we're told in Chronicles that Solomon built the temple on the side of that altar. Which means that the only way this will work is if the temple covered David's palace. Do you understand what I'm saying? In other words, his palace is the actual location of the altar. So why did he have to go up? Why could he be seen coming from a distance by Ornan the Jebusite? It's in his living room. This is the article that came out when she located his palace. Here's the Temple Mount, the Ophel. Kathleen Kenyon was the first one that discovered the stepstone structure. Here's the large stone structure. Large stone structure, that means David's palace. Right here. Now, what I want you to see this right here? Can you see that? That is the hottest dig in Israel. That's called the Gavati parking lot. And let me go back. I want to show you another picture of the Gavati. Here you can see it right here. And we're going to go forward. We're going to see another picture. All right, here. You see, here's the Temple Mount. Can you see that? This is the Ophel. Now, by the way, I want you to see this building right here. Can y'all see that? See this wall coming out and going along here? See this road coming around? Okay, this is before they began to excavate this area. This is right after, this picture was taken right after 1967, the Six-Day War. And right here, do you see this? That's a parking lot. It's called the Gavati parking lot. And right here, right across the street from the parking lot, this is where the Elat Bazar found David's palace. Okay? All right. Here, this circled area. That's where they found David's palace. Right there. See the parking lot? This is Gavati parking lot. Okay. Now, wait, no. I'm telling you wrong. This is the Gavati parking lot right here. Right here. This is the City of David Park. Right here. And that's the Gavati parking lot. Okay. In November 2015, This is Wikipedia, but I'm going to show you. I want to show you these first. Let me pass these around. These, there is a conference that's held in Jerusalem in the city of David. And just make sure I get all these back. This is on all the archaeological discoveries, especially pertaining to the city of David. And there, the majority of the articles are in Hebrew. But what they are, this is a conference specifically of the archaeology of the city of David. And it was held just a few weeks ago. It was held in the month of Elul every year. And so, all right. In the Gavati parking lot, here's what happened. The parking lot was where a lot of buses parked, a lot of cars parked, but it had become in terrible shape. You could run a car, driving it in there, you bust an axle, you were all kinds of problems. So the owner had a choice of repairing the parking lot, which he didn't make any money from, or selling it to a business to put up like condominiums, restaurant, whatever. He had a lot of money was going to come. Well, again, all these groups, these schools, these institutions said, wait a second, if we could buy that parking lot, parking lots are their gym. Just like Dr. Barrett was saying, they're going to excavate the Arminian parking lot because you don't have all these structures on top of it. And so so they bought the Gavati parking lot for the archaeologists to dig. So I want to show you what they found. In November 2015, the Israel Antiquities Authority announced the probable discovery of the Acra. Now, let me give you a little bit of a very quick chronology. Judah the Maccabee. Judah the Maccabee we're in the Hellenistic period. The Hellenistic period started when Alexander the Great shows up in Israel. He makes friends with the Jews, goes on, conquers Egypt, he conquers Syria, and he dies. And so his kingdom is divided between four of his generals. One of his generals takes Egypt. They're the Ptolemies. And one of his generals takes Syria, and that is going to be the Seleucids. Okay, so the Seleucids, they're going to fight back and forth. The Seleucids, we get all the way to Antiochus Epiphanes IV. And he's the villain of Hanukkah. And y'all know the story of Hanukkah. So the war starts. Judah's killed. His brother, Yochanan's killed. He takes over. He gets killed. His brother, Yochanan. Excuse me. Yochanan takes over. He gets killed. So the last of the brothers, Shimon Hasmonai, takes over. And he defeats the Acra. The Acra was built by Antiochus Epiphanes. And it was south of the Temple Mount in order to dominate the temple. When Jews come to worship, which direction do they approach from? The south. They approach from the south. And so he places that there as intimidation. When Judah Maccabee comes in and cleanses the temple, the Acra is too strong. He can't beat it. Shimon Hasmonai finally beats it. Now, he dies, and his son, Yochanan Hyrcanus, becomes the king and the high priest. He dies. His son, Alexander Yunai, becomes the king and high priest. He dies. His wife, Alexandra, is going to rule in his place for 7 years. She dies, and she has two sons. One's called Hyrcanus, one's called Aristobulus. Hyrcanus is a good, sweet guy, but real weak. Aristobulus is a terrible, mean guy and real powerful. And so she hires a strong-armed man to support Hyrcanus, who she makes the high priest and the basically the prince. His name is Antipater. He has a son who is Herod. Okay? And that's how we get from that point to this point. So the Hasmoneans are going to be all the way from Judah the Maccabee to the time of Herod. It's that time period. So according to the archaeologists Doron Ben-Ami, Yana Tekakonovitz, and Salome Cohen, excavating the Gavati parking lot adjacent to the city of David, they had unearthed a complex of rooms and fortified walls they identified as the Acra. This complex of rooms, this places it slightly south of previous suggested locations on the Ophel. Finds include fortification walls, a watchtower measuring 4 by 20 meters, and a glacis. Anybody here know what a glacis is? I know John knows. Glacis in Hebrew, I love the word. It just has that neat sound. It's halaklaka. Halaklaka. Can you say that? Halaklaka. Okay? It means smooth. The glacis is going to be a sloped hill that they put at coming up to a fortress, especially around the towers, so that if anybody tries to get to the wall to scale it or to undermine it, he's going to fall down because they'll plaster the top of it, and then they'll pour olive oil. Okay? And so it's the big defense. So they located the glacis and a glacis, bronze arrowheads, lead sling stones, and ballista stones, that's what look like cannonballs, were unearthed at the site, stamped with a trident, the emblem of Antiochus IV Epiphanes. They are indicative of the military nature of the site and the efforts to take it. The excavation also yielded coins for the reigns of Antiochus IV through Antiochus VII, as well as a multitude of stamped Rhodian amphora handles. This is going to be what they bring the oil up in. Here's the glacis. See it here? Now, it's in layers. And they had different materials in each layer. And they found that there was chalk, a layer of chalk between each layer. And the chalk was there to hold the layers together. They also found that it was built in the spring. It was built at the beginning of Antiochus Epiphanes' period in the land of Israel, based upon the coins that were found. And it was destroyed in the time of Antiochus VII, which is the time of Shimon Hasmonite, just as we're told in the historical documents. All right, now, here, this right here? That is a part of the wall of the Acra, right here. Now, wait a second. In fact, this whole wall is part of the wall. Here, that is on the western side. The eastern side, Professor Igal Shiloh, he found the glacis. This is the glacis going up to the stepstone structure. Here, I thought I had a picture here, a chart. I'll show you the chart in a moment. We're back over. I've got a student that this guy is remarkable. Okay, I met him when he was 17 years old. He lives in Alabama. He was at a temple conference I was teaching at. He had got a job so he could go to this conference. He flew in. He paid for everything himself because he wanted to learn about the temple. Now, he lives in northern Alabama. He lives about 10 hours from my house. Every other week, he showed up at my house to go to services with us. Okay, when he was 17 years old, he would drive that distance, come for services, and drive back home. He became our cantor. He's now in Israel. He's 18 years old, and he's going to school in Haifa. He calls me every day. Now, he went to a conference on the Acra for me. He gets in, he's learning Hebrew. He's really much better than I am in Hebrew. But he goes, and he can't converse in Hebrew yet. And this conference, it's 100% in Hebrew. So he's saying, what am I doing here? You know, how's this going to help and everything? But he went, and he was excited about going. He gets in, and they say, wait a second, do you speak Hebrew fluently? He said, no, not at all. And they said, all right, come on in. So they take him, and they say, all right, we're going to show you around personally. Everybody else has to see the Acra from a distance. The archaeologists take him down and explain everything for him. So what would seem to be just something that's not going to work out, you can see the hand of God. Okay. So I want to show you. You see this wall right here? See that? That's part of the Acra. Here's the glacis. Well, all right. Whoa. All right. That wall that you just saw was right over here, right there, and it comes and it turns and it goes this way. Now, you see these buildings? These are Hasmonean structures that were built after the time the Acra was destroyed. Okay? Now, here. The Acra has been discovered. The first was by a man named Crowfoot, who was with the Palestine Exploration Fund. Only problem is he didn't know what he found. All right? The second was by a guy named McAllister right here. And they found, and they each found what's called projecting towers. Here is the Gavati parking lot. This is the one that was discovered by Igal Shiloh. Okay? So this is the proposed diagram of the Acra. This is by the archaeologists that work there. Now here, there are 8 watchtowers. See, there's one on the corner here, 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 here. It's 80 meters from here to here. Okay, so that's the whole width of the city of David. After that, you go straight down the Kidron Valley, straight down the Tyropian Valley. From west to east across the entire top of 200 meters going from this way, which is 656.16 feet from south to north. This is a huge structure. Now, here's the sketch of the glacis on the east by Igal Shiloh. See the glacis here? Here's your stepstone structure right there. All right? Now, here's the problem. Dean, can I borrow you? John, can I borrow you? Tim, can I borrow you? I have a question. Which is the meanest of these three guys? Dean? All right. Boy, Dean. I said they said you were the meanest of the three. The meanest. The meanest. The roughest. Yeah. Huh? All right, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to act this out. First, you're going to be David's palace. All right? Tim, you're going to be the temple. Huh?
I'm an inanimate object.
You're going to be the Acra. All right? So we're going to have right here, we're going to put John right here. And John is David's palace. But according to Morton and to Cornuke, Tim, you're going to be right here. No, you got to push him out of the way. All right? All right? But after that, when Antiochus is going to come along and he's going to build the temple, you got to push Tim out of the way. You can't have these at the same place. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. Y'all can sit. Okay? It doesn't work. Do you see why it doesn't work? It's a simple thing to be able to refute these arguments. In Israel, my friend, my student, Russell, they asked him, why are you so interested in the Acra and everything? Well, he said, there's this group in the United States that's teaching that down here was the location of the temple. And they said, Nobody's that stupid. Okay, basically, it's just ludicrous because the evidence is there. Evidence that you can see, that you can document, that you can know that it's there. All right, let's see. How much time do I have? Okay, all right. Here, the Ophel. Remember that he said it starts at the Ophel, goes down to the Gihon Spring. Y'all remember that? So this is, you see the word Ophelus? Ophelus, this is out of Josephus. This is where he's referred to the Ophel. All right. This is a quote from Josephus. This is Titus, the Roman general, speaking. He says, are not your people dead? Is not your holy house gone? Let me tell you what's happened. He's destroyed the temple. You can see that right there. Is not your holy house gone? He's already destroyed it. He's already destroyed the upper city. There's one place that is holding out, and that's the lower city. And so he's trying to get them to reason with him, the surrender. Okay, so here it says, is not your holy house gone? Is not your city in my power? And are not your own very lives in my hands? Do you still deem it a port of valor to die? However, I will not imitate your madness. If you throw down your armor, deliver up your bodies to me, I grant you your lives, and I will act like a mild master of a family. What cannot be healed shall be punished, and the rest I will preserve for my own use. To that offer of Titus, they made this reply, that they could not accept it because they had sworn, I'm going to drop down. At this, Titus had great indignation that when they were in the case of men already taken captives, they should pretend to make their own terms with him as if they had been conquerors. So he ordered this proclamation to be made to them that they should no more come out to him as deserters nor hope for any further security. Let's drop down to but fight them with his whole army. So he gave orders to the soldiers right here both to burn and to plunder the city, who did nothing indeed that day, but on the next day they set fire to the repository of the archives. That's going to be what we call the Zestos, to Acra. Now, Acra is destroyed, but they called the neighborhood where Acra stood Acra. What I want you to see is the Acra and the temple are two different locations. So, to the council house and to the place called Ophelus, or the Ophel. So, the Ophel and the Acra, the city of David, cannot possibly be the temple. All right, here we have Queen Helena's palace was in the middle of Acre. In other words, that neighborhood. And it was destroyed after the temple was destroyed. I'm going to just tell you this part. They claim it's the Fortress Antonia. It cannot be. If you read Josephus, Titus commanded, first off, the Jews had undermined the Fortress Antonia. The rebels got the Antonia at the first of the war. The Romans get it back. The Romans are going to stage their fight from the Antonia towards the temple. The Jews are going to undermine and fill up this mine, this shaft, going under the Antonia with all types of flammable, combustible materials, set it on fire, and it doesn't work. It almost works. The whole thing is now unstable, but it doesn't fall down. So Titus commands them to tear down three-fourths of the Antonia, leaving one tower. This tower he's going to watch the battle from so that he can determine who is brave and who's coward, so they can be rewarded or executed. The rest of it is torn down, and they use that as the avenue in order to go in and attack. Following the defeat of the temple, Titus commands that the rest of the Antonia be torn down. So how can they say that this is the Fortress Antonia, which the Romans preserved? In other words, they're working off of this. First off, I don't want to say that they did this purposely, but they're working off that you don't know Josephus and you haven't checked it out. Or you don't know the archaeology of what's there, okay? And I understand that. I'm not trying to say, oh, shame on you. I'm saying, check out the information and what you'll hear people come up and they're convinced this is the way it is, okay? I'm just going to, there's slides here that take you through the, these are pictures of palaces and fortresses built by Herod or enlarged by Herod. This is, there's three scholars that say the Fortress Antonia was this small. Most scholars do not. This is Ehud Netzer. This is the Antonia in Professor Netzer's drawings, diagrams. He's now passed away. But this would accommodate the amount of troops that were there in the Antonia. Okay, that's, I guess, all of them. Any questions?